Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Talent Game podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burridge, and with me today is Erdla Gunhilda Dottir. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. And perfect pronunciation. Thank you.
So for our listeners who don't know who you are, can you go ahead and introduce yourself, please?
My name is Erdla, and I've been working in the financial arm of the game industry for over 10 years now, and previously worked as a director of FP&A at CCP Games, and more recently I worked as a lead of FP&A at Supercell. And currently, or today, I actually have my own consultancy. It's called Figures, where I work as a fractional CFO building financially healthy companies.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for that. And yeah, two absolute powerhouses of the games industry right there, CCP and Supercell. So I'm really, really looking forward to digging into to all of this. And congrats on starting your own consultancy as well. That's super exciting.
Thank you.
So first question I always ask everyone is, what are you playing right now?
Ah, yeah, good question. So like right now, I'm not playing anything special other than Just Dance and Super Mario Kart with my kids. Like that's something that we do quite regularly. But like overall, I really love playing board games, both me and my husband. I think that's what actually connected the two of us back in the days. And we play a lot of those at home. So, you know, strategy board games like Catan, Dominion, and Terraforming Mars, like they would come at the top of my mind. But then, like on other types of playing games, I actually tend to play quite a lot of mobile games in particular. However, I don't stay too attached to the game. I love playing those and I go quite deep into the game. But then it's like I'm looking for the gameplay and the action, but then my mind, I think this is probably the financial background I have, I immediately go into thinking about how does the game work, what's the economy, what's the feeling I get. So I get kind of deep into that, and then maybe like a month or three in, I've just exhausted the game for myself, and then I'm like, thank you, and then I leave the game, no strings attached, and I find another game to play.
I love that, and especially the board game aspect, because naturally when I say what are you playing right now, it doesn't necessarily have to be video games. I also love board games. In fact, when I was at EA, I used to run the monthly board games club and all these sorts of things. Curious, what was the board games that you and your husband first bonded over?
It was both Catan and Dominion. And cool. Wow, I don't know if I should share this, but like the first summer that we were together, we started our summer holidays. So this is like we had been together for about a year, you know, we're still kind of testing grounds and everything. And summer holiday comes, and the only thing that we did for a week was to play Dominion. And what happened is that we got the first box, and then we exhausted that. 2 days later, we would buy the next one, and then the next one. And then we've just played it, for 10 plus years. So it's like, it's a really great game.
I know what, my wife and I also love board games, but it's funny, like, I love the strategy board games the most. Like, that's where I could spend some, but she does not, right? So we have to find, so we have to find, like, this good middle ground. And so the two games that I think we've played the most are Splendor and Azul.
I don't know
if you've heard of either of those two, but they're fantastic.
Splendor, I play Splendor quite a lot, and now, like, most recently I played a lot with my kids, and I love being able to kind of introduce different types of games to them as well.
Oh, great. And unlike video games, you know, something like Splendor and Azul that has these really tactile, lovely tokens and pieces and cards, it's like, I get a lot of satisfaction purely just from holding these things. So that's, I love that.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're talking about video games, and, I think you've been, like I said, CCP Supercell. So you've been in the games industry now for about 9 years. I'd love to know how you got into the games industry in the first place.
To be honest, it was partly by accident, but I think it was partly because I really wanted to get there, but I didn't know how. So when I was young, I really loved playing, you know, like I think many many other from our generation. Like I grew up by playing Tetris and Super Mario Bros. And Civilization, and then of course tons of board games. But like these games became something kind of cultural for me, right? And then you grow up, you get educated, and kind of like when I grew up, I stopped playing those games, partly because university can be hard and time consuming. And then I had finished my master's degree, and I actually saw an advertisement from CCP Games. So this is back in 2015. And CCP Games is a very well-respected company, both here in Iceland, but also internationally. And I thought to myself, I had already studied management accounting and business intelligence. I thought this was a great way for me to step into the as a financial analyst role, but also being able to kind of reach back to my childhood dreams and get closer to gaming and actually like, how do games get created? Like, what types of people create games? And like, I really was curious about that. And I was very intrigued by getting into the process with CCP Games. And here's a little bit of a fun fact. So, and this is a token of the great culture CCP Games has, is that while I was in the hiring process with them, I got pregnant, and this was my first child, and this was tricky. And I go into the meeting, actually signing the contract with my manager back then, and she's amazing. And I tell her, because I tell her like, hey, you know, I have to share some news with you. And I hadn't even told my own mother, you know, I was in a very vulnerable and sensitive state. I really wanted that role, but I was pregnant. So what to do? And so I tell her, before I sign the contract, I need to let you know that I just recently got knowledge that I'm pregnant. And knowing that I wouldn't start until about like 3 months later, I had to finish, of course, the other job that I was working in. And I gave her the opportunity to like, do you want to get someone else in? I don't know what's the status of the project you have in front of you, and I'll be completely fine. And her response was absolutely not. Like, we've chosen you, we want you to come in, we'll support you, you know, all the way through. So like, so much care and support. I don't think I've ever witnessed that anywhere else. And so yeah, that was how I actually started in the game industry.
I got goosebumps listening to that story. That's amazing. And you know what? You ended up staying at CCP for 6.5 years. So what a great call from them. I mean, obviously, it's the right thing, the morally right thing to do. But the point being, you know, you invest in your people, right? And and they do great things. So, yeah. Well,
absolutely.
Here we go. And what makes you stay in the games industry then? I mentioned you've been in the industry now for, well, 9 years. Yeah, that's quite a long time in one industry. What makes you stay in it?
Yeah, I love how vibrant the industry is. I feel like, I mean, the industry has obviously grown tremendously over the years. However, there are like a couple of cultural elements that I get attracted to. One is like, I feel like so many people are, you know, they're curious learners, and I feel it quite open. I love the creativity in the industry. I feel like the industry attracts these people as well. It's like, you know, some people are like, you know, when they were young, maybe you would categorize them a little bit more like nerds or geeks, but then they get, you know, to adulthood and they find the industry and they flourish. So it's this, yeah, sensible curiosity, learning alike and being very creative. Those are the key elements that I love about it. And then obviously it's also, I think, the speed of the game. I think I like that too.
Yeah, fantastic. I agree with all of those. All of those points as well. And it's interesting that you're talking about getting into games and why staying in games is empathy and variety. And before we hit the record button on this one, we were actually talking about a tricky topic, which is very relevant at the moment, which is in the case of layoffs in the games industry. And naturally, thinking about being empathetic and doing the right thing. So, yeah, well, like I said, before we hit record, you had mentioned that you've been part of, like, financial planning, unfortunately, has these scenarios where you have to be involved in that. So perhaps throwing it back over to you, like, what was that situation and what were the key learnings that you had from that?
Yes, absolutely. Back in 2017, while I was working at CCP Games, being very young in the industry and also young working in financial planning, I had the opportunity to take part and experience firsthand what happens behind the scenes before and going through and then afterwards going through a layoff. And obviously it's insanely hard. And I remember we had a very good FP&A or like financial planning department up and running at CCP Games. We had already put a lot of effort into having great systems in place. We had already implemented financial business partnering. So there were many things that actually were quite smooth in the operation. And the company back then is already, how old is it? 17, 19 years old. So we already had a lot of time to have the prep work done. So we could see quite far into the future, at least, 12 to 18 months in front of us. So when we saw early signs that we needed to shift gears and maybe to kind of go back what was happening inside the company at that time, it's like, this is the time when VR started. So the VR technology, and CCP Games is a company, they put a lot of emphasis on good quality. And of course, EVE Online, which is their flagship game, it was a breakthrough game back in the days. And still is, it's very unique. So when VR started to evolve, they really wanted to push the boundaries there, right? However, what happened is that we saw that the market wasn't, it wasn't there. And you could debate if the market's still there. It's, anyway, that's a different discussion. And so we saw already in front of us that we needed to go into some and make some hard decisions. And at this point, it's only the leadership team and it's the team working with financial planning that actually have the lens and the understanding of what's happening and why. And what was really great about how CCP Games, how they did this and how they went about this is that they understood the gravity of the situation and they put up like levers in front of them. So many months beforehand, they would go through a painful exercise of, okay, this is what needs to happen before this date so that we can either push the date forward or maybe not needing to go into anything that's going to be hard, meaning layoffs. So I have to use the word fascinating, and maybe it's not the right word for a scenario like this, but it was fascinating to see how well the leadership team, how they worked, how they communicated, because this is insanely hard because you've already hired all these people and you've all these operations up and running. So needing to go through a layoff, it's insanely painful. So they took ownership and of what they needed to do. And for us, also knowing about this, it was really hard to kind of face your colleagues over the course of, about 12 months. Right? And then going, like when they knew that they had to go through those layoffs and they knew what was the end date where they had to actually start planning on how to do that, they did it as professionally and with as much care as they could do it. What was good about this is that they actually decided to sell away two offices that they have. So the employees at those offices, they were actually able to keep their jobs. Surely it was hard to get detached from CCP Games, but this was done in the most, ethical and empathetic way that was possible to do. So they didn't lose their jobs, but they got, shifted to another company. So that was very well done, I would have to say. And then for the rest of the people, in particular in the Reykjavik office, which is their, biggest office here in Reykjavik, it was a lot about having also the HR operations up and running. So the HR team, they actually changed into like a full recruitment team for those that lost their jobs here in Iceland. So they helped them to get other jobs inside Iceland. So that was done in a very beautiful way. And then, of course, the existing employees that, of course, didn't get laid off, there's a sense of guilt and there are many feelings that get stirred. And typically when you go through layoffs, you'll see many people that will actually just decide to leave the company because it does stir a lot of feelings inside you and you question yourself, like, what are my values? Do I want to continue here? So that's very normal. But in this case, that didn't happen so much. And I think it was because they did it with the most care. They did this in the most caring way that they could. It was painful, but it was caring and empathetic at the same time. And you could see that the culture really got, like, it bounced back quite fast. So I have to say, yeah, just huge respect for that whole leadership team, how they did this, how they planned for it, and how they communicated it. It was very professionally done.
Great. Thanks for sharing that story. And sorry, I didn't have the best segue into to starting off that, but that was great. And thanks for being so transparent about it, because I said it's a difficult topic to talk about most of the time. But I always hear such great things about the culture at CCP, having also had people on my team in previous companies that have worked there as well. So it sounds like, in summary, initially with that financial planning, right, you'd done the work, you'd communicated that out to the leadership team, they'd come up with some milestones and like a really rigid plan, and with layoffs being the very last resort, and trying as much as possible to build in ways to bring in revenue. When you hit that point where it's like, okay, we're doing layoffs, of course you have that empathetic communication, but actually it sounded like an all hands on deck, like, how can we ensure that these people their lives remain intact? So it sounds like there sounded like some sort of acqui-hire situation that happened, and also the HR team, like you said, turned into recruiters. In terms of, I've been in these scenarios before. We used to, at EA, I've been in the situation where the recruiting team would then consult with those who've been laid off. So I've been in such scenarios where it's on like practice interviews, help with CV and resume writing, or just promoting them and getting their details into the hands of other recruiters at other games companies. It sounds like that's what that HR team were doing. It's like, really, really sucks that we're doing this. So sorry, but we're going to try everything that we can to ensure that your lives are not completely upended and destroyed by this. So
absolutely.
Hats off to that. You mentioned there about culture and the culture bouncing back there. Yeah, I would love to talk about culture for a bit, actually, before we get into some other talent topics. So what does culture mean to you? Because I hear, again, you know, worked at Supercell, another company that is also often highly praised for its culture. So I'd love to hear, what does culture mean to you? And as someone who has been in both director and lead positions, how have you helped to craft the culture that you want to see?
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, like, talking about culture, that's something that I feel is quite close to my heart. For one part, I'm very interested in, like, how cultures form and how they are inside companies. But then also, I think this interest goes back to, I've lived in a couple of countries. And I remember when I did it the first time, I was so shocked by, you know, a whole country would have a completely different culture than my own, you know, so that was like a reality check. And then it becomes like, why is the culture different? What makes this culture different than the one I know? And the more I think about it, like, to speak about it very broadly, I mean, culture is it's the values that we go by in the workplace. And very briefly, it's what we say and what we do. But also, it's what we don't say and what we don't do, right? So I feel like this is something that goes very deep. And the culture, it is crafted by the leadership team and the management layer. Like, what type of behavior do we want? And, like, what do we tolerate and what do we not want in here? So as we reflect on, you know, cultures inside workplaces and cultures in countries as a whole, they get shaped by the laws that we set. So thinking about a workplace, it is like, yeah, you need to have like some guidance. What do we do and what do we don't do? And then it's also about what shapes the whole kind of consciousness of who's working there. So like sometimes companies, they go through traumatic events. Let it be layoffs, for an example. And then you need to revisit, like, did we do this based on the values that we have? Did we do this in the right manner, you know? And when you shift away from these core values that you have, then you have a mismatch in culture. From speaking from a lead position that I've held, one way that I've helped shape it is that for one part, I make sure that I'm very in touch with the values that are inside the company, and they need to become my own. And oftentimes, actually, companies, they hire for these values. Like, these are values that you test actually in the hiring process. And this becomes then something, it's important that I communicate very clearly to my direct reports. What are the types of behavior that we like to see here? If anything happens, if anything goes out of the ordinary, let it be something small or big, I make sure I communicate. So like, hey, I noticed that you didn't speak up here, but in this company, we actually favor that everyone has a say. So I encourage you to speak up. So you try to kind of push, and you do it gently and communicate clearly what it is that you're expecting from a behavioral point of view from that employee.
Fantastic. Thank you, Erdla. And I was just frantically taking notes through that. I love those takes. So there were three big points there that I took away from that. So I like how you say culture is what we say and do, but also what you don't say and don't do. It's exactly right. Like, you have what you say, like the intent, and then actually the actions are really how that completely forms it. And if you start to move away from the values that you have laid down as a leadership team, and then start making decisions or saying things or making actions that completely misalign with that, then you start to have this mismatch, like I said, this unstable culture. And lastly, leadership needs to embrace the company values. And I think you said there as well, like, make them your own values, like make them the way that you, what you say and what you do. And if you have a whole company hiring for culture, then that should actually be quite an easy thing as well. And I preach this all the time. If there's any people in listening at the moment that have gone through my interview training, we are completely aligned on this. I think the most foundational aspect of any hiring process really is understanding the culture, hiring against that culture, and being ruthless with that bar as well. You can hire people that don't have the skills, that's fine, but they absolutely must be aligned with the culture. That's my take. Would you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's also, I think, like, having those strong values, like, they can be really helpful. For an example, like, if you confront a difficult decision or you're not sure what's the right course of action, well, it's actually quite smart to take that decision up and pair it against the values, because then it can help you gain clarity on what is the right course of action.
Fantastic. And while we're talking about culture and hiring, I'd love to hear from you about what advice you'd have on crafting high-performing teams, because you've been in high-performing FP&A teams and had influence on building those. So what would be some of your key points on crafting those teams, attracting, developing, retaining that talent?
Yeah, that's a big question. I think what comes to my mind immediately on crafting the high performance teams, you need to have trust and psychological safety. Like, you can't have a team that are afraid of sharing their thoughts, even though that means that we need to redo a whole project. Like, you need to be able to show up and be honest and, like, truly care about the team's performance. So everyone in the team, they need to care about the results that you're getting. If there's no trust and no psychological safety and no care, then it just really goes in circle. It becomes like blah, you know, it's nothing really happens. I also think by shaping those, this comes into just kind of also the culture piece, the behavioral aspect of it. And I feel that using like one-on-ones and really do coaching with your team members, that can just do wonders, because every single one, I mean, we're humans, right? We are people and we're working. Every single one of us, we have our demon is probably like too strong of a word, but everyone is dealing with something. Most of the times it's actually something just coming from your childhood that you know, kind of comes into the workplace. And you need help with recognizing those, and you need help with becoming self-aware. But if you know that you have a team that has trust and psychological safety, you can bring your whole into the work. And I think that's just a lot more fun. I think it helps people to gain clarity. It helps shut down those, let it be imposter syndromes or any kind of doubts that they may have. And the focus goes into team work and doing the best work they can do. So that's something that I feel has the biggest impact on creating high performance teams.
What tips do you have, like really actionable things that someone can do to help build that trust and that psychological safety? Can you, like, even just a one or two examples of how a manager or leader could like address that?
Yeah, I think that to be able to foster that, you need to demonstrate that. And that means that I need to be able to be also vulnerable with my team members. Like, no leads should need to be too harsh or cold, you know? So like, I need to be able to display that I trust them, and I'm trying to create a psychological safety. I tell them up front, I made a mistake, and I speak about it openly. I would just foster those and showcase what type of behavior we'd like to see here. And then again, and that's something that I would do in a group setting. And then again, if I would go into the one-on-ones, by showing care, by being a good listener, be able to give good feedback, and also saying up front, this is how I work, this is how I expect you to work, I want you to come your whole self, you can trust me, but I really want you to also put your full, you know, foot forward and trust others in your team as well. I also feel that, you know, facilitating debate, that's also a great tool to use. I mean, innovation, it happens in chaos. So you want all these different opinions and thoughts to come forward. And that means that you need to facilitate those. You know, you would ask for, hey guys, you know, how do you feel about this? Do we need to change anything? And sometimes you just guess like, yeah, you know, maybe no particular answer. And then you'll be like, you know, what do you guys feel is wrong with this? What do you feel we could do better? And you would get some responses, and you always to kind of bounce back. And sometimes you would try to actually try to kind of get them to maybe raise their voice a little bit, because you want to showcase that this can be a psychological safe debate that we're having about this project that we have in front of us. So project meaning it's something rational, and then we're trying to speak a little bit more from our feelings based. And we need to showcase that that's okay. We can all have a debate and that's fine. That doesn't mean that someone needs to go out of the team. We need to be able to speak up all the time.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. And I think I'm thinking now about some of the best teams, my favorite teams I've been a part of. And it's exactly that psychological safety where we can all have a debate and disagree and walk away as friends and colleagues and be open with each other and not have to put any sort of like mental effort into thinking about, I don't know, politics or anything like that. You can just get the work done, you can enjoy it while you're doing it and be really productive. So thank you for that. What would you say are some common traits of top talent in, well, the games industry, but just in general, like what are some common traits of top talent that you've perhaps worked with before, whether at like an individual contributor level or a leadership, or maybe it doesn't even matter what level? I'm throwing that back to you.
yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, there are a couple of traits that I've seen that I feel definitely works really well with me. Maybe it can be different for someone else, but I feel that, you know, great leads and good great employees are those that can be very good communicators. They're humble, they're caring, very curious, learners. They're hungry. It all comes from the place that they're trying to do their best work, and they understand that to do their best work, they need more people around them, right? And you need them to be on the same page as you. So by communicating very clearly and being humble about it, you actually are able to get more people to speak up while you're in that thought process. So I feel like, you know, those types of qualities, they tend to kind of seek out the best in others.
Yeah. Yeah, great. And actually, moving back towards finance a bit more, you've been, you know, you're talking about being like fractional CFO right now. Like, what would you love to see from companies and how they interact with finance teams and CFOs? Like, what do you think is the best way for companies across many different disciplines to collaborate with a finance team or a CFO? And perhaps some mistakes that you've seen there as well could be good to hear.
Yeah, well, that's a big question. I think what immediately comes to my mind is that, first of all, finance departments, they should absolutely not be a back office. They don't need to be the highest communicate, or like, they don't need to... Oh, sorry, let me start over. Yeah, so yeah, that's a big question. I think what first comes to my mind is that they should absolutely not be a back office. One of the key areas that I've seen that can bring results is actually to be able to foster and implement financial people inside all of the teams. And I'm not only speaking about game teams, I'm speaking about all the teams. And we use a term that's called business partnering or financial business partnering. And what this does is that, for one part, you can systematically set up processes in place so that you can be in tune with what's happening inside the company at any point in time. But more importantly, you get this new flavor of thoughts. It's like just like a different color that you get into the team. Let it be the game team or the marketing team. And you can actually help them understand, like, by taking this and this course of action, what type of impact it can have on the financials. So that creates accountability. It also creates like communicative pathways throughout the whole company. So when you have the financial teams go out there and speak with all of the teams, you can so clearly see if there is a mismatch with the financial planning you have at hand and the strategy. And the beauty of it is that you can cross-correct the path so quickly, because you can see, and let's just put up for an example, let's say that you have a new game and you're pushing it out to launch, right? So you need to be up to par on the strategy on how exactly you're doing it. So is the game team in tune with the marketing team? Is the community team, you know, up and running? The Q&A team, like, is everyone ready? Do they know exactly what to do and when? You know, do you have the dates in front of you? And then it becomes, when you have the dates in front of you, you can map all the financials as well. And you can see, okay, so this is the budget that we're going to have for this launch and how we're going to do it. So it actually, it helps other leads to think 2, 3, 5 steps ahead. And for some companies, financials is just like the backdrop. It's not the key marker. What's most importantly happening, it's the planning part. So you, of course, you try to plan for the best course of action with what you know at every single point in time. And then you follow up with that. And that can actually bring very beautiful results. And it also reduces just a little bit of the chaos by having someone that's helping out with planning.
So really agree with that point you made about finance shouldn't be in the back office or in the background there. I think the best companies I've worked with, that all disciplines are very visible, isn't all together. It's a one team mentality. And I also think it's a real myth to say, you know, product or game dev, they're not interested in finance. and finance. Oh, they're not interested in product or game dev. It's like, nope, that's totally untrue in my experience. Obviously there's going to be some who aren't interested in other departments, but I generally tend to find like the finances of the company and how that's planned and how that's built and all of that. I think everyone's interested in it, especially when you present it and you can tell stories in a really interesting way, and vice versa for the product side. Everyone all in together, I think, is definitely the best way to build culture, and also transparency about, you know, the actual goals of the company and like what is the reality of the finances. Are we in a good spot? Are we not? Do we need to dig in deep and hit the milestones and then celebrate when we do, and all that stuff. Finance can play such a big part in all of these situations, which I love. Erdler, we are well approaching time. I feel like I looked up at the clock there and I was like, oh, we're getting close, right close to the end. So I loved all of your takes here on culture, how finance can really play an important part in all aspects of a company, even like that whole story that we started off with, empathetic layoffs and how to do that in the right way. That was all fantastic. Thank you. My last question that I ask everyone though is, what's your favorite interview question?
Wow. It's hard to choose. There are many, and of course, you need to craft your interview questions depending on like what type of people you're seeking for and what type of talent you need for the role you have at hand. But when I think about what is it that I favor when I go into interviews, is that, and this is going to sound negative, but I always try to take a nibble, or I try to put in a question. I do it more fluidly. It's not maybe like one set of question that I get to, but I always try to ask the candidate something that they can tell me a little bit more about their current or former employer. And what I'm trying to kind of seek out there is actually like, what words do they use and how do they talk about their current or former employer? Because that can just tell me a lot about how they're thinking and where do the struggles come from and where are they going. I'm also trying to search for, why are they applying for this role? Like, is it the role pulling them, you know, forward, or are they being pushed out of the company that they're working for? So I always try to kind of seek out what words they're using. And for me personally, when I hear someone speak really negatively about their former employer, it's a complete no-no. I mean, nothing is black and white in this world. Sometimes you go through hard scenarios. That doesn't mean that everything about that company is completely negative. It can be a learning point. So by going deeper into that, you know, sector, it can tell me a lot about how these people, how they think.
I totally agree. I ask a version of that, I would say, in every interview that I do. Those lines, because I want to hear. Yes, there could be, you could be job searching because there's something pushing you away from your current company, whatever the reason is. And it's like, okay, that is the spark to make you start like searching. But you really want to hear about like, why are you here? Like, why are you in this conversation right now? What's pulling you towards this company? And what can this company provide you as far as you're aware? And are you being strategic with your next step instead of just like a gut reaction? I want to get out of there. It's like, we want to be purposeful. And also, are you respectful and empathetic?
Yeah.
Even if you have a really terrible toxic manager, are you just like, hey, thank you, that's not for me, goodbye, you know?
Exactly. It respectfully. Yeah,
totally agree. Great. All right, well, we're at the end, so I have to say thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me about all of these wonderful talent topics. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.